Grab your marshmallows and sleeping bags for the Burnt Marshmallows podcast, where cozy mysteries come alive around the crackling campfire. Picture yourself wrapped in a warm blanket, sipping hot cocoa as we share spooky tales that will whisk you away to a world of mystery, ghosts, and perhaps even an occasional monster. Crime-solving spirits, urban legends, Bigfoot, we've got it all. Join Burnt Marshmallows every Tuesday, wherever you listen to podcasts for cozy mysteries.
Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
Abgenommen, bedauert.
And thank you all for tuning in. An evidence warehouse in Scotland Yard that holds the objects of the murders throughout the years. Join Orson Welles as he tells you about the cases associated with each object on display. Today's episode, the 1952 series, The Black Museum. If you enjoy this episode, please check out the archives for volumes 1 and 2. And while you're there, if you could check out the polls and the comments on Spotify, you can check out show links for my email, my social media, my website, and my store, all in the description. And if you enjoy this podcast, then please consider following, reviewing, and rating. I've said it before, but the more ratings I get, the easier it is for people to find this podcast and enjoy these great stories. Why should we just hog it all? And with all that, please enjoy the show.
This is Orson Welles, speaking from London. From the Black Museum. It's a repository of death. A kind of museum. Yes, here in the grim stone structure on the Thames which houses Scotland Yard is a warehouse of homicide, where everyday objects, a cigarette lighter, a young girl's diary, a broken perambulator, all are touched by death. There's a woman's glove. That's a familiar object, hand-stitched, soft leather, the gauntlet type. But this glove touched death.
I found something, Inspector.
I see. A glove.
Lady's glove, sir.
Yes. Pigskin. Very nice, too. I wonder now, do you suppose this dainty object fits a killer?
And today, that woman's glove can be found in the Black Museum.
From the annals of the Criminal Investigation Department of the London Police, we bring you the dramatic stories of the crimes recorded by the objects in Scotland Yard's Gallery of Death, the Black Museum.
Scotland Yard's Museum of Murder. Yes, here lies death. Here, for example, is a pen. The ink crusted on its sharp point. This was a poison pen. The words it wrote dripped malice. They were vitriol on human hearts. They caused death as surely as a bullet. Here we are, here's the glove. Dainty, isn't it, this little glove? It's made for a tender hand, made to grace the costume of a lovely woman. Come to tea. That's when our tale begins. In Matfield, England, in the lovely countryside, at tea time. Or just past tea time. In fact, it was just past tea time that Mrs. Michael called.
Elizabeth! Elizabeth!
Yes, ma'am?
Have you seen Miss Mary yet?
No, ma'am.
It's long past tea time. The tea is cold. There's no sense in making fresh until we know if my granddaughter is coming. Hurry now. Use the telephone.
Yes, ma'am.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Elizabeth was a good girl. Bit of the slavey type, perhaps, but a good girl. Obediently, she asked the operator for the number of the cottage where Miss Mary lived with her mother, Dorothy Fredericks, who was Mrs. Michael's daughter, and their housekeeper, Martha Patch.
There's no answer, ma'am.
If it was busy, I'd understand it. No answer. Well, it's still warm outside. They may be having tea in their garden, forgotten all about me.
Come, ma'am, Miss Mary would never forget her grandmother.
Well, in that case, you'd better run down the road and find out what they're up to. Now, go on, now. You can make my tea when you get back. Now, go on. Hurry up. Don't stand there like a ninny. Now, hurry.
Elizabeth did as she was told. She deposited her apron in the hall, left by the back door, and hurried down the road. And here are her reactions as she turned through the high yew hedge into the garden at the Fredericks cottage.
Miss Mary, why would you be lying on the ground, Miss Mary? Where's your mother? Where's Miss Dorothy? Oh, Miss Dorothy, sitting against the stones, Miss Dorothy. Oh, you'll be cold, Miss Dorothy. Oh, Martha, where's Martha? The house, the doorstep. Oh, Martha, you were bringing out tea. You were serving tea.
There's no note of hysteria, however. A short while later, when Inspector Seymour and Sergeant Layton took charge for Scotland Yard.
How far along are we, Sergeant?
Oh, a lot of details, sir. Multiple murder makes a lot of work. Three women, all shot once. The medical examiner is on his way. The regular crew is working on fingerprints and all the usual, sir.
Very well.
Which one do you suppose went first, Inspector?
I've been thinking about that. Looks as if the youngest was picked off first. Then the mother was caught as she tried to climb the wall we found her against.
Oh, and the servant?
Probably an afterthought. Or no witness, something like that. That would account for the dropped tray and the smashed crockery.
Methodical, careful, clean thinking, just as methodical as the men searching the house, covering the ground inch by inch, missing nothing. After a while, that job was done. The inspector sat at the kitchen table with many pieces of glued-together crockery in front of him.
See what I see, Sergeant?
Oh, just cups and saucers, a teapot, sugar bowl, cream pitcher.
We have three bodies, Sergeant, and four cups and saucers.
Yes, sir.
It's possible, then, that our murderer came to tea. Any sign of the weapon, Sergeant?
Not a thing, sir. Not even a spent cartridge.
Probably a revolver, then. Well, we'll hear about that after the medical men get through. Anything else?
Yes, sir. I found something, Inspector.
I see. A glove.
Lady's glove, sir.
Yes. Pigskin. Very nice, too. I wonder now, do you suppose this dainty object fits a killer?
Oh, I've no doubt we'll find out, sir.
And you're a bit more optimistic than I am. One never really knows at this stage. Where do you find this gauntlet?
In the garden, sir. Between the mother and the daughter.
Well. Next step's one I dread, Sergeant. Never could stand it, even as a constable. Notification detail in those days. Well, nothing else for it.
Notification detail. So called by the police who were sent to notify relatives that someone is injured or dead. That part was over and done with by now, of course. But its equivalent was upcoming, a business of questioning Mrs. Michael, mother of Dorothy Fredericks, the grandmother of Miss Mary.
You have a job to do, Inspector Seymour. Stop fiddling with your fingers and get it done.
Thank you, Mrs. Michael.
You've a murderer to catch. I want him caught, too.
I admire your courage, Mrs. Michael.
Not courage. I'll cry myself silly as soon as I go to bed. Just angry. What do you want to know, Inspector?
Was your daughter a widow?
Separated. Not divorced. Just separated. About 5 years now.
Any particular reason?
Yes. She was too particular. Expected to hold a man by chaining him. Can't be done. He left her. I've been working on getting them together. For Mary's sake. Waste of time now.
Where's her husband living?
Piddington, Oxfordshire. Has a nice farm. Doing well. Pretty decent chap. But like to look at the girls, if you know what I mean. I told Dorothy, let him look. But no. She wanted blinders on him. So off he went. Now, this.
Did they quarrel ever?
Not since they've been apart. They rather agree to disagree. But no one gets younger. They should have been together again, soon.
Anything else, ma'am?
You want me to do your work for you? Get along with you. You're dying to get on over to Piddington. It's written all over you.
Of course, Inspector Seymour did just that. He traveled to Piddington and stopped at the pub. A pint of ale and conversation with the bartender.
Know anything about a fellow named Fredericks hereabouts?
Yeah, quiet chap. In and out of here occasionally.
Works a farm, I hear.
That he does. Seems to like it out there. Not in town much.
Live alone?
Usual hired hands. Usual cook. Unusual housekeeper secretary, sort of.
Sir?
Why? You one of those private detectives? Frederick's wife wanting grounds?
Oh, no, nothing like that. Matter of fact, Frederick's wife is dead. Just interested.
That housekeeper now. Anybody would be interested. Good looking. Auburn hair. Tallish.
I see. Now, what road's the farm on? I might drive by, just have a look myself.
Right fork, about a mile north.
Right fork, about a mile north. The inspector drove his car in that direction. He knew that Paul Fredericks, the estranged husband, was in Matfield by now, with his mother-in-law. This youngish woman, from all descriptions, would be alone in the house. She was, except for the elderly, waspish cook who admitted the inspector.
Miss Jean's laid up. Fell yesterday and bruised herself. Mr. Frederick's gone to Matsfield. What do you want?
My credentials. I'd like to speak to Miss Jean, if you don't mind.
Come in, if you have to.
Inspector Seymour was asked to wait in the front room, and he was permitted upstairs to interview an extremely attractive woman.
I won't stay long, Miss...
Moore, Jean Moore. This is such a nuisance, Inspector. I'm a big girl now. Imagining tripping over my own feet and bruising myself so badly I have to stay in bed.
I'm sorry to hear that. This, of course, is merely a routine. My visit, that is.
I understand. How can I help you?
Did you know Mrs. Fredericks?
Of course, and quite well. Her daughter Mary, too. I've often thought Mr. Fredericks a fool to stay away from them.
Did you see them recently?
No, I'm sorry to say that I haven't.
I understand there was a market in town day before yesterday, and Mr. Fredericks spent the whole day there. Is that correct?
Why, yes, that's correct.
And your day before yesterday, Miss Moore?
I was here all day. Cook will tell you. Surely you don't think I had... Why, it was that evening I fell. I remember it distinctly because Mr. Fredericks was so upset about it when he came home from the market.
Thank you, Miss Moore. You'll forgive me if I check up with the cook, won't you? Purely routine, but we find it... Now, ma'am, you do remember her being here all day, then?
I said so.
Well, is there any incident you recall to fix the day in your mind?
There is one. She was upstairs. She called from the window. Mum, she called. Will you bring a couple of logs in from the fire when you're done with the chickens?
Mum, is that what she calls you?
Why shouldn't she, seeing as I'm her mother? Well, don't gawk at me. She gets a salary and so do I. We each do a job. Anything wrong in that? Even if Fredericks doesn't know it.
No, nothing wrong.
The inspector was struck by this fact. He filed it for future use. Then, almost as an afterthought, he went back upstairs to the bruised woman's room.
Sorry to bother you again, Miss Moore, but would you mind trying on this glove, just for size?
The glove? Oh, yes, of course. Nice bit of pigskin. Seems a trifle slug and mean. About half a size too small. Whoever owns this must have lovely hands, mustn't she, Inspector?
Back in Matfield, the medical examiner gave both Inspector Seymour and Sergeant Layton plenty to think about.
The mother and daughter were both shot from behind. The housekeeper was struck in the chest. Excellent shooting.
With a revolver, I suppose. No shells about the place.
And not a revolver. The bullets we recovered were small bore from a rifle. My guess is a single-shot, small game gun. The kind where each exploded shell must be removed from the chamber by hand.
Ah, that would explain why there were no shells about, Inspector.
It also explains how Mrs. Fredericks had the time to run as far as the wall before she was hit. It explains a lot of things.
Glad to have been of help, Inspector.
Oh, you have been. It may interest you to know the kind of gun you describe. I saw it, leaning against the kitchen wall in a farmhouse in Piddington, just this afternoon.
And the woman's glove. Yes, that has its place today in the Black Museum. The theories began to take flesh on their bones, but they were still theories. True, it seemed peculiar that a young woman would bring her mother into a house as cook and not tell the fact to the owner. True, a glove which seemed a perfect fit, well, it might be half a size too small. True, a woman in bed with bruises might have tripped and fallen in the house where she lived. And many thousands of people own single-shot, non-ejector rabbit guns. Together, these items might make a confounding composite, but a good defending counsel could still make mincemeat of them. These were some of Inspector Seymour's thoughts on the subject of his obvious and prime suspect. Then another fact was added. A fact with several possible meanings.
They found a bicycle, Inspector, about a half a mile down the road toward the railway station from the Fredericks' cottage.
Whose is it?
It was Mrs. Fredericks' bike, sir.
Any fingerprints?
Only Mrs. Fredericks.
Of course. Well, there's nothing for it, Sergeant. We'll have to canvass the area. Might as well get started.
First up, the railway station at Matfield. The ticket agent was a blank. The washroom attendant was a blank. The porter was, however, somewhat helpful.
Repeat that for me, will you, please?
Well, I remember her because the parcel she was carrying seemed kind of peculiar for a woman. Long and wrapped in brown paper. She got off the 12-8. Real sporty looking she was, with kind of reddish hair and wearing trousers.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Then there was the newsboy.
You're not making this up, are you, son?
So help me, sir, I'm not. Like I said, I was delivering the afternoon paper. I saw this party watching through the edge of the Fredericks place. I kind of thought it was a man, on account of the long pants. And then she stood up straight and I saw it was a woman. She had a kind of long package with her. It wasn't none of my business. I stayed on my own side of the road.
And the obliging truck driver.
I heard about this from the porter down at the station, Inspector. So I figured to come in and tell you.
Go ahead.
I picked her up round 4:15. She stood in the road and waved. I pulled up for her. She asked would I take her into town, seeing as she had to catch a train. I gave her the lift.
Did she have a parcel of any kind?
Yes, sir. Sort of long and wrapped in brown paper.
Oh, yes, it's helpful when honest folk have good memories and come forward with what they remember. These memories sent Inspector Seymour back to Piddington, back to the farm.
My daughter isn't here.
Where is she? It's important that I verify certain facts with her at once.
She's gone to London to see a doctor.
I see. What train did she take?
11:15. Why she'd be so obliging as to answer you, I can't say.
Could you tell me what she was wearing?
I could, but I won't.
Here now, this sort of thing gets no one any place.
Why don't you leave her alone?
Has it occurred to you she may have knowledge dangerous to herself and that we want to protect her?
Oh, that's a bit different.
Well, Mrs. Moore?
She was wearing her hunter green suit, brown shoes and brown bag. No hat. Jean doesn't like hats.
Thank you, Mrs. Moore.
The voice on the telephone to the yard traveled much faster than the train to London from Piddington.
I've got it, Inspector. Hunter green suit, brown shoes and bag, tallish, auburn hair, quite striking looking. I'll be at the station myself. The 11:15 from Piddington. Fair enough, sir.
Inspector knew the matter was in safe hands. He left the house, wandered out to the farmyard. There in the large, orderly barn, he found a hired hand.
May I trouble you, sir?
Oh, no trouble. Not yet, anyways.
I'm interested in a few points. You might be able to help a bit.
What, me? Help Scotland Yard?
Well,
that's one, that is.
You may be able to.
Oh, far away, sir. Always interested in police work. Like on the wireless.
Yes, I suppose it is interesting, like anything else, when you're not used to it. Oh, now then, Do you see much of Miss Moore around here?
Oh, every day, of course. She keeps the egg and milk books. Checks with me every day. Nice woman. Friendly.
Ever known her to go rabbit hunting? Anything like that?
Oh, no. But funny you should ask that, sir. She's been interested in shooting lately.
How did it come about?
Well, I was cleaning my rabbit gun out in the yard. She stopped by. She thought it was a funny-looking shotgun on account of he'd only had one barrel.
You set her straight.
You bet. Anyway, we got talking. Was it dangerous?
Well, I told her it wouldn't kill anybody unless you got real close.
What, just a little gun like that? Real close?
She asked how it worked, so I showed her.
Well, the next thing, she's bought some shells, and she's asking me to teach her to aim and fire.
Did you, Ralph?
Well, I did a bit.
Uh-huh.
But you know how it is. Woman like that and all. You can't teach a body to aim a rifle without putting your arms around her. But I know my place, I do.
Of course you do, Ralph. Anything else about the gun and Miss Moore?
Well, around last Wednesday, she asked to borrow it. Well, I lend it to her. Why not? But then I needed it back, see? Old rabbit's been getting in the carrots. So I asked her for it. She gave it back and said I'd have to clean it. She'd had it in the rain or something. So I did.
One more question, Ralph. Did you ever see Miss Moore ride a bicycle?
I seen her try, about 2 weeks ago, wobbling around on an old one of Mr. Frederick's. She got better, but, well, not near good enough to travel on it.
I see. Well, you've been very helpful, Ralph.
Really?
And you're sure it was last Wednesday she borrowed your gun?
Oh, certain. It was Friday. I had it back.
And on Thursday, three women had died at Matfield of gunshot wounds.
I beg pardon. You're Miss Jean Moore?
Why, yes, I am. Why?
My name is Leighton, Scotland Yard. My credentials.
I see.
Inspector Seymour asked me to meet you here. Seems he'd like your assistance on the Fredericks case.
But I told him all I know.
Well, something else has come up, miss, so if you don't mind, we'll just cross the platform and go back on that train. It's not a bad train. Practically an express through to Matsfield.
The train ride to Matfield was made in a rather stony silence. Sergeant Leighton watched his fellow passenger carefully, failed to see what was going on behind the rigid mask into which her lovely face had set. At Matfield, Inspector Seymour was waiting.
Kind of you to come right back, Miss Moore. My car's waiting, just over there.
Silently, she got in. Inspector Seymour carried on an almost solo conversation until they reached the local station house. There.
You're waiting there a few moments, Miss Moore. We'll be with you.
Jean Moore found herself in a room with half a dozen other women of about her build and coloring. No one spoke. Unknown to Jean, a panel slid open in an adjoining room.
All right, Porter. You recognize any of these women?
Yes, sir, I do.
Which one?
Second from the left, sir. She's the woman got off the train with that brown parcel, like I told you the other day, sir.
Well, young fella.
I know that one. She just got up and moved over there. That's the lady who was looking through the hedge the other day.
Sure, Inspector? Sure, I'm sure. That's the dame. I'd know her in a million.
Perhaps if she'd been less striking in appearance. Perhaps if she'd used a pistol instead of a long rabbit gun. Perhaps... Inspector and the sergeant faced Jean Moore alone.
I must make some inquiries of you, Miss Moore. And I must warn you, anything you say may be taken down in writing and given in evidence. What? Did you hear me, Miss Moore? This is no laughing matter.
I won't hang you, no. I'm not right. Never have been. My mother was away for years. Paul was sweet. Not much of a man. Not as much as he thought he was. But sweet. And he had some money. Then they wanted him back. Why should I give him up? For a prissy wife and a stupid kid and a harridan of a mother-in-law. It was a nice gun. A nice gun. But I couldn't get the shell out with my gloves on. Oh, you were smart. You found me. You found me. So I lost him. But she didn't get him back, did she? All she got was a bullet in her back. Like a rabbit.
She ran like a rabbit. Tried to jump the wall. She fell back. I'm getting out of here. Get away from me. I'm getting out of here.
Hold her, Sergeant. I'll call the matron.
And today, the woman's glove still offers its silent testimony in the Black Museum.
Orson Welles will be back with you in just a moment. Jean Muir was certified insane. Her own cunning, her craftiness, were not the operations of a normal mind. Her complete breakdown substantiated the testimony of the alienists. She was put away for the rest of her life. And so the case was complete. Each part of the story fitted together as neat and as well-fitting as that dainty pigskin glove. Now, until we meet next time, in the same place, and I tell you another story about the Black Museum, I remain, as always, obediently yours. Museum, starring Orson Welles, is presented by arrangement with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Radio Attraction. The program is written by Ara Marion, with original music composed and conducted by Sidney Torch. Produced by Harry Allen Towers.
Future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Speaking from London. Here in the grim stone structure in the Thames, which houses Scotland Yard, is a warehouse of souvenirs. A warehouse where everyday objects, a hammer, a suitcase, a shirt button, all are touched by murder. You take this canvas bag.
This canvas bag might give us a lead, sir.
What's that writing on it, Sergeant?
It's the name of a local merchant, J. Gregory, Northampton.
Well, today that canvas bag can be seen in the Black Museum. From the annals of the Criminal Investigation Department of the London Police, we bring you the dramatic stories of the crimes recorded by the objects in Scotland Yard's Gallery of Death, the Black Museum. Here we are in the Black Museum, Scotland Yard's
museum of murder. Yes, here lies death. All the ways and means of death. Guns, of course, abound in plenty, but there are other simpler objects. Things that were never meant for murder. Now, this gold trophy. A famous sportsman climaxed a great career by winning this. Later, it was an exhibit in his trial. It was proved he had used it to batter a man to death. Here's a knitting needle. Perhaps used to knit for absent friends, for children not yet born. And it was put to more lethal use. To end a life. Ah, here we are. Here's the canvas bag. It was once a bag used to hold provisions in a Northampton grocery store. Later on, it became more famous, but we anticipate. Let's begin the story not with a canvas bag, but with a certain young woman who, at her home in Birmingham, was packing her suitcases.
Here's another dress, Mary.
Oh, thanks, Mother.
And your slippers.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that must be all.
Let's just have another look round. You don't want to forget anything.
No, that's right.
Oh, here you are, just as well I looked. Some stockings.
Oh. Well, I think that's all.
Yes.
I'll just lock my suitcase.
Mary?
What, Mother?
Are you sure you'll be all right?
No, of course.
Oh, it seems such a strange arrangement, you going all the way to London alone.
But what's strange about it? Tom's working in London, saving for our passages to Canada. He can't come to fetch me.
But travel all that way alone. Oh, Mary, let me come with you.
No, Mother. I'm not a child.
You're an almost married woman, but that doesn't mean your mother still can't worry about you.
Oh, Mother, really? Look, I'll be perfectly all right. Tom and I are getting married when I reach London. A month later, we'll be on our way to Canada.
And we'll lose you. It's so sad. You'll write as soon as you reach London, won't you, darling?
Yes, of course I will. And don't worry, please. I'll be all right.
A girl leaving home to get married, an anxious mother. Nothing very new about that. Except that the girl never went to London. The following day, her train arrived in Northampton, where she was tenderly greeted by a charming man, some years older than herself.
Hello. Hello.
What? Here I am, Mary.
Oh.
My dear Mary.
Oh, darling. I've been waiting here for a moment. I thought you...
What, that I might have deserted you? Hardly, my sweet. Did you have much trouble with your family?
Yes, a little. Dad was anxious, and you know what Mother is. She worries terribly.
Yes. You told them the story about meeting Tom in London.
Uh-huh. And they believed it.
Oh, good.
Oh, darling, it's wonderful to be with you.
Come, Mary. I found lodgings in St. John Street.
Oh, good.
But listen, since you've told your parents you were meeting Tom Reynolds in London, we might as well continue the deception, eh?
How?
Well, to the landlady, you'll be Mrs. Reynolds. And I, of course, shall be Mr. Reynolds. It might be better if you called me Tom.
The landlady found Mr. and Mrs. Reynolds a charming couple, so devoted, so very much in love.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm Mr. Reynolds. I wrote to you about a room.
Oh, yes, Mr. Reynolds. I was expecting you today, just like you said in the letter.
And this is my wife, Mary.
Pleased to meet you, Mrs. Reynolds. I expect you'd like to see the room right away.
Yes, I would.
Well, if you'll just follow me, there's only one flight of stairs.
Let me carry the bag, dear. It's too heavy for you.
All right.
Have you any idea how long you'll be staying, Mr. Reynolds?
Well, I can't tell you at the moment. It depends on circumstances, doesn't it, sweetheart?
Ah. Yes, dear.
Why, it's Mr. Reynolds. I didn't know it was so late.
Well, my wife's asleep, Mrs. Marsh. I thought I'd just pop in to tell you that we're leaving next week.
Leaving?
Uh-huh.
Well, isn't that rather unexpected? I was talking to Mrs. Reynolds only yesterday, and she said...
Yes,
she...
but you see, I've had some news from friends of mine in Canada.
In Canada?
Yes. We're going to Canada, Mrs. March.
Oh?
We're leaving from Liverpool next week.
Oh, that will be nice for you, Mr. Reynolds, and for your sweet wife, too.
Yes. Oh, but there is one other thing.
Huh?
I'd be very glad if you wouldn't say anything of this to my wife. You see, she's not quite sure that she really wants to go to Canada, and... Well, I think it'll only upset her if anyone talks to her about it.
Oh, of course. I wouldn't breathe a word, particularly since you've asked me not.
Thank you so much, Mrs. Marsh. We'll be giving up our room on Friday. I'll arrange for a car to call for the luggage early in the day.
So considerate, the landlady thought. Such a gentleman. On Friday morning, she said goodbye to the couple with reluctance. At least she said goodbye to Mr. Reynolds, who explained that his wife had gone ahead to the railway station. But even the nicest of lodgers are only a passing memory in a landlady's mind, and she might never have thought of the young couple again if it hadn't been for the events that occurred some weeks afterwards. On the high road from Rugby to Northampton, two men were walking home after work.
Well, Bat, what do you think of the team's chances on Saturday?
They want to be better than last week, eh, Sam?
Yeah, I should say so. Hey, look down there in the ditch beside the road. What do you see?
Oh, wait a minute. Oh, it looks like a canvas bag.
Ah, well, there's something inside it. Ah, well, what's that all over it? Lamb, ain't it?
Oh, probably a dead dog. Come on, I'll buy you a pint.
No dead dog. Bert, look, will you? An arm. I can see it plain.
Oh, crikey. Come on, Sam.
Huh?
This is for the police.
Yeah.
The local police recovered the body and Scotland Yard was summoned. Inspector Courtney, accompanied by Detective Sergeant Finlay, arrived in Northampton. They met the doctor who had conducted the post-mortem.
The body was that of a woman, Inspector.
Have you any idea of her age, Doctor?
Youngish. I'd say in her 20s. In height, a little over 5 feet. Slight build.
And in what state was the body?
Dismembered and partially decomposed.
And the cause of death, have you any idea about that?
There's no way of telling, Inspector. The only thing you can take for granted is that she was murdered.
The yard men had a dual task there. They had to track down the murderer, but first and foremost, they had to find out who had been murdered. They set out to examine the evidence.
This canvas bag might give us a lead, sir.
Yes. Now, what's that writing on it, Sergeant?
It's the name of a local merchant, J. Gregory, Northampton.
Yes, the name's clear enough. Luckily, the lime didn't rot it away.
As I'd say it was meant to, sir.
Yes, I'd say so too, Sergeant. I think we'll call on Mr. Gregory.
Was this a lucky break early in a difficult case? It seemed not. For when the London detectives interviewed J. Gregory in his Northampton warehouse, the merchant could give them little help.
Yes, it's my bag, all right, Inspector. No mistaking that, but how did it get in there?
Well, we thought you might be able to tell us that.
Well, I assure you I can't. These canvas bags are used for transporting groceries between this warehouse and my several shops in the town.
And they're, handled by your employees?
Yes.
Are they ever given out to the public?
Oh, no, they're not.
Were you aware that one was missing?
Well, hardly, Inspector. I have upwards of 100 of these bags and a lot more to do than count them.
Yes, of course, yes. But now, you understand the gravity of this situation.
Yes.
A woman has been found dead. Murdered.
Murdered?
Her body wrapped in one of your bags.
Inspector, I can only assure you I know nothing whatever about it.
At this stage, Mr. Gregory, not knowing the identity of the murdered woman, the bag is our only clue. Now, you do appreciate that.
Yes, yes, of course.
Sir, that I'd like to talk to one of your employees who might have handled these bags and who might have been in the position to take one or even give one to somebody else.
Inspector, I'll see to it my staff are available.
Thanks.
As a matter of fact, you can begin with my warehouse manager, my own brother.
Oh, yes, thank you, yes.
Wait, I'll get him. George?
Huh?
George, come here, will you?
Presently, the obliging Mr. Gregory returned with his brother, the warehouse manager. He, too, was courteous and polite to the detectives, and only too ready to answer the questions they asked him.
Now, where do you live, Mr. Gregory?
In Birmingham. 7 High Street, Birmingham.
And, are you married?
Yes. Wife and 2 children.
And you live at home?
Well, sometimes I stay here at the warehouse. You know, because of the distance involved in travel, you understand?
Oh, yes, perfectly, perfectly. Now, tell me, have you ever lent or given anyone outside the firm one of these canvas bags?
Well, I don't like to mention it, but...
Well, go on, George. Tell the inspector whatever he wants to know. Did you give away one of these bags?
Well, yes, as a matter of fact, I did, John. I know it was against regulations, but... Well, a tramp came in one day asking for some scraps of food and...
Yes, and...
Well, I felt sorry for him. You know how it is.
Yes, quite.
I gave him a couple of tins and, well, a canvas bag to carry them in. Sorry, John, but that was the only occasion I have given one away.
Now, could you tell me how long ago would this have been?
Oh, well, I suppose about 6 weeks. Perhaps a bit longer. I'm afraid I can't remember the exact date.
Well, thanks very much, Mr. Gregory. I don't suppose you can help us in this matter of the murdered woman. I mean, you've no idea who it might be.
None whatsoever, Inspector. I'm sorry.
Well, thank you very much indeed, gentlemen. Good day to you. Good day.
The inspector left the warehouse deeply disappointed. It seems that the trail led nowhere. For the inspector believed this story of the tramp that George Gregory had told him. There's no reason why he should not have believed it. But today, evidence that proved the lie can be seen in the Black Museum.
Orson Welles will be back with you in just a moment.
There are hundreds of women reported missing every year throughout England. Now to the local police stations throughout the land, the messages went out in a long and slow search to find the identity of the murdered woman.
Desire information on any woman reported missing within past 2 months. Special attention to young woman about 5 feet in height, of slight build, well-dressed.
In answer to your inquiry, we've checked all missing persons approximating to the description given in the Glasgow area during the last 2 months. There are 3 missing persons whose descriptions might fit the one given, and further investigation is being made in each case. I shall report further within the next 7 days.
Hello, sir. This is Scotland Yard. We've been looking into your inquiry, and we find that in the London area there are 27 cases of missing persons. That would seem to justify investigation in relation to your inquiry. From preliminary inquiries, 13 of these cases can already be discounted. On the remainder, further inquiries are still being made. We'll be in touch with you later, sir. Goodbye.
The reports came flooding into Scotland Yard. The leads faithfully followed. Dead ends, all of them. The investigation into murder was bogged down because nobody knew who had been murdered.
Here's another one, Inspector. People by the name of Wilson in Birmingham. Worried about their daughter.
Oh, I never knew there were so many youngsters who run away from home. Well, still, have it checked, Sergeant.
Right, sir.
Another patient inquiry begins. When did your daughter leave home? Where was she going? Have you heard from her? The questions were asked, the answers were written down, and the result was sent to Scotland Yard.
Wilson, yes. Number 9 High Street, Birmingham. Left for London to marry a young man named Tom Reynolds.
Seems like she didn't get there, sir.
Yeah. Family had a letter from Reynolds, just a sort of friendly note, no mention of the girl.
I understand young Reynolds went to Canada, sir. He was once engaged to the girl, but they broke it off.
Oh, yes?
The next thing, when he was in London, the girl had a letter from him asking her to marry him and go out to Canada.
Yes, but did the family see the letter?
No. It was all pretty hurried. They were upset, but she seemed to be able to get her own way.
Oh, I've heard this kind of thing before. Now,
I wonder who the man was.
Not Tom Reynolds, that's certain. His letter to the family is enclosed there, sir.
Oh, let's see it, will you? Yes, wait a minute. Now, Rough Crossing, how is everyone? Mismilled neighbors. No, 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 he doesn't mention her. Now, what was her name?
Mary, sir.
Mary Wilson, 9 High Street, Birmingham. Sergeant, Sergeant, that seems familiar.
To me too, sir. I can't quite place it,
though. Wait a minute, I've got it.
What, Inspector?
George Gregory, that warehouse manager. His address is 7 High Street, Birmingham.
Number 7? Well, that means he lives next door.
Patience had paid off again. Careful and painstaking methods had given them a new lead, or rather, the renewal of an old lead. For the canvas bag had first led them to the Gregory warehouse. The detectives went back to Northampton, back to interview George Gregory.
Mary Wilson, Inspector? Well, of course I knew Mary Wilson.
Now, tell me, when did you last see her, Mr. Gregory?
Oh, some time ago. She went to Canada, you know. She married a young chap named Reynolds.
Yes, but did she marry him?
Well, to the best of my knowledge, she did.
You said I knew Mary Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
Why the past tense?
I don't know. Well, don't you always use the past tense when you're not likely to see a person again?
Oh, you don't think you'll see her again?
Well, Inspector, with her married and living in Canada, that'd hardly be likely, Inspector.
George Gregory seemed at ease. His answers rang true. It could be nothing but a strange coincidence. Inspector Courtney gave certain instructions.
I want a cable sent to Tom Reynolds in Canada. Find out if he married Mary Wilson or not. The odds are he's still single.
Then Courtney went to Birmingham, to number 9 High Street, where he talked to Mary's mother.
I don't want to alarm you, Mrs. Wilson, but I'm from Scotland Yard, and I want to make certain inquiries.
Scotland Yard? Oh, my Mary's done nothing wrong, has she?
Of course not, no, no. Now, tell me, Mrs. Wilson, do you really think your daughter might have gone to Canada with her young man?
Oh, I don't know what to think, sir. I was always puzzled. I mean the way she seemed to patch things up with Tom.
Yes, did you question that?
No, I didn't say much. I was glad, really.
About her marrying the young man?
Yes. Well, you see, for a while I was worried there was another man she seemed to like. But too much, if you know what I mean.
Oh, you disapproved.
Oh, Mary was never one to take criticism, but I didn't like it, I can tell you.
Was the other man older?
He was. Old enough to know better. Him with a wife and 2 children of his own. I tell you, I was relieved when I thought Mary was going away to marry Tom Reynolds.
Now, there's one more question I must ask you, ma'am.
Yes, Inspector?
The name of this attentive gentleman.
Well, I don't like to make anything of it. Mine...
No, but I'd like to know his name.
Well, he happens to live next door, and his name is George Gregory.
We've had a reply to your Canada cable, sir.
Okay, Sergeant, go ahead and read it.
Tom Reynolds is living in Ottawa. He's a bachelor. Last time he saw Mary Wilson was in Birmingham, 3 months ago.
What about his letter from London?
There was no letter from London.
It was beginning to add up. Point by point, link by link, a chain of circumstantial evidence was being forged. Forged by the patient police.
I think he's our man, Sergeant.
And imagine it, sir. He's been here under our noses since the very first clue you picked up.
Yes, the canvas bag. Let us write to him. But we haven't tied it up yet.
What's the next move, sir?
Mary Wilson left for London to meet Reynolds.
Or so it seems she told her parents.
Yes, it seems more than likely, sir, that they came here. So they must have lived somewhere, she and the man she met.
Now the detectives went through the town, front streets and back streets, fashionable hotels and cheap boarding houses. They went wherever there was a sign, rooms to let.
Well?
We're from Scotland Yard, ma'am. We're inquiring about a young couple who might have stayed here some, 6 weeks to 2 months ago.
No, not here. I only take regulars. Had all my boarders for the past 12 months.
Thank you, ma'am. Sorry to have troubled you.
They ran the whole gamut of landladies. The suspicious landladies, the mean, the garrulous landladies, the kind, the generous, the curious. Then in a lodging house in St. John Street, their work paid off.
A young couple? Yes, I've had a few. What was their name?
We're not sure what name they might have been using.
Oh, you mean Crooks. Well, let me see. Oh, it couldn't have been that nice young couple, Mr. and Mrs. Reynolds. Now, it
What was that name?
Reynolds.
Tom Reynolds?
Yes, I believe it was. Such a nice man. Oh, and his young wife was named Mary. She was awfully sweet.
Mrs. Marsh, can you give me a description of Mary Reynolds?
Why, yes, I think so. Short, about 5 feet tall, brown hair, rather pretty.
Yes.
Not much help, I'm afraid. I can't remember any other details.
Oh, you helped a lot, thanks. And the man?
Tall, dark hair, and a small mole on his left cheek, older than her. Oh, but he was very nice indeed. Oh, surely they couldn't have done anything wrong.
Mrs. Marsh, can you, I want to attend the police station tomorrow morning at 10?
Me? Why, sir?
Well, we'll be having an identification parade at 10 sharp.
All right, quiet, everyone. I've got together a group of 8 people, Inspector.
Thank you, Sergeant. Mrs. Marsh, I want you to try and identify the man you knew as Tom Reynolds.
All right, Inspector, but really, I know we and his wife went to Canada.
Nevertheless, if you don't mind, just walk slowly down the line and examine each man.
Eight men. A couple of detectives, 2 men taken out of the cells, 1 recruited off the street, and in the middle of them, a protesting, indignant George Gregory.
It's not this man. Nor this. No, not him either. Why, Mr. Reynolds!
Gregory! Grab him, man! I got him!
Enough policemen present to overpower the hastily departing Mr. Gregory, who was immediately arrested on a charge of having murdered Mary Wilson. Today, the evidence that brought about his downfall, the canvas bag that first directed police attention to him, occupies a place of honor in the Black Museum. George Gregory killed the woman, he said, because she was too much in love with him to let him go, but he couldn't afford the scandal that might arise if he continued his association with her. Not a very nice reason, but then, the reason for murder seldom are. Anyway, George Gregory was tried and convicted and paid for his crime one morning at 8:00. And now, until we meet next time in this same place for another story about the Black Museum, I remain, as always, obediently yours.